This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Hello and welcome to ADHD, A Young Person's Guide. This podcast series focuses on attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, referred to as ADHD, and is designed to help young people and their families.
Do please subscribe to this series of podcasts. Other episodes include Adjusting to Change, Risky and Impulsive Behaviour, Getting the Right Support, and a two-part special on women and girls.
It is produced by the mental health charity, the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short, in partnership with Clinical Partners, the UK's largest private mental health partnership. Search for Clinical Partners ADHD or visit www.clinicalpartners.co.uk for more information. I'm Dr. Blondin French. I am a researcher at MindTech at the University of Nottingham. My main research interests are on neurodevelopmental disorders, but more specifically ADHD and dyspraxia. I work with young people and parents of children with ADHD, and I myself received a diagnosis of ADHD as an adult, which helped me make sense of my life as a child and adolescent and helped me go to university and put the right support in place. This podcast will focus on ADHD and sleep. Sleep has a huge effect on mental health, and many of us with ADHD can have sleep issues. An estimated 25 to 50% of people with ADHD experience sleep problems, ranging from difficulty falling asleep, waking up multiple times, through to insomnia. You might experience hyperfocus with racing thoughts and bursts of energy that makes it difficult to settle down for sleep, and it can lead to a disrupted sleep-wake schedule. Those of us with ADHD can experience being tired during the day as a result of poor sleep, whilst others experience restlessness, non-refreshing sleep with multiple awakenings. And this can affect cognitive function as well during the day. We'll be looking at some of these problems with tips, advice, and strategies that can help you and your family. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Emily El-Bahawi and Ellen Tracy to talk about sleep and ADHD. Emily, can you start with a brief introduction of who you are and what you do, please?
I'm Emily, I'm 22, and I am currently taking a gap year, but I plan to study psychological and behavioural science.
Brilliant, thank you. And Helen, could you give us a brief introduction of who you are and what you do?
Hi, I'm Helen Tracy. I'm a sleep practitioner with Parenting Special Children, a charity based in Berkshire. And during this time, I've been involved in facilitating sleep courses for parents of children and young people, including teenagers, who have neurodiversity, including ADHD. I've also been involved in one-to-one sleep clinics with young people with neurodiversity, including ADHD. I did my training through Southampton University Sleep Disorder Service, and I've since undertaken further training with the sleep charity in Cerebra. I'm also a parent of a young adult. He has ADHD, autism, and anxiety.
To start with, Helen, can you tell us a bit more about the connection between ADHD and sleep? Why is it such a problem?
So the connection between sleep and ADHD is highly complex, and I would say that more research is needed to discover exactly why certain sleep disorders are associated with ADHD. But there is some evidence that the body's sleep-wake cycle, it's also known as the circadian or circadian rhythm, plays a really big role. Sleep-wake cycle essentially tells us when to go to sleep and when to wake up. This sleep cycle is delayed in some people with ADHD, so they're naturally more inclined to go to bed later and wake up later. There is some research linked to this that indicates that the production of melatonin, which is the hormone that helps to regulate our sleep-wake cycle, that this is delayed, the release of melatonin is delayed in those with ADHD, hence why there's this delay in settling to sleep.
Emily, can you please tell us how is sleep affected by your ADHD?
I think following on from what Helen said, a lot of it tends to be just never being able to get to sleep at the time where I need to be or where I want to be. I often end up staying up a lot later than I should do. It sort of ends up as a vicious cycle, because then I end up waking up quite early for whatever I have to do for the day, and so I haven't had enough sleep. And often that just exacerbates the difficulties I have because of ADHD, like if I was already struggling to concentrate. I suppose in terms of actually getting to sleep in the evenings as well, I would say sometimes I find I have this kind of nervous energy, and I think that that sort of energy seems to persist exactly when I don't want it to. That's probably quite a psychological thing, but yeah, it definitely just keeps me awake at the times where I don't want to be.
Thank you, Emily. And it's quite interesting as well to see not just an issue with sleeping is a knock-on effect it has the next day on your ADHD symptoms. And sleep deprivation and ADHD have got a lot in common. You know, it's very similar symptoms. So it's really not a great mix at all. Helen, I'm just thinking, is it just about sleep onset, or is there also an element of waking up through the night and unsettled sleep, poor quality sleep as well?
I think beginning around puberty, young people with ADHD, they're more likely to experience either shorter sleep time, so have less sleep, problems falling asleep, staying asleep. They are also at higher risk, unfortunately, of developing a sleep disorder. And young people with ADHD often experience more restless sleep, including restless leg syndrome. According to the Sleep Foundation, 50% of adults with ADHD experience restless leg syndrome, which is where you have an overwhelming urge to move your legs. It can only be relieved by movement. And some young people have reported to me that it feels like they've got creepy crawlies going up and down their legs. But also young people with ADHD can struggle with waking up in the morning, often because they've struggled to settle to sleep, and intrusive sleep where they lose interest in an activity. Their nervous system then disengages in search of something more interesting. Sometimes this disengagement is so abrupt that it can induce sudden extreme drowsiness, even to the point of falling asleep. So they're trying to contend with lots of different sleep issues. For many young people, part of the problem with having ADHD is that ability to switch off at the end of the day and allowing their minds and bodies to unwind and relax and then settle into sleep. And this is particularly difficult for people with ADHD. And we always say that ADHD doesn't disappear at night. It affects the whole 24-hour period.
Thank you, Helen. That's really interesting. I'm just curious about one thing I picked up on. Emily, you said that it takes a long time to sleep. And Helen, you have echoed that as well. So is it similar if you wake up through the night? If you wake up in the middle of the night for whatever reason, Emily, does it take a long time to go back to sleep then as well?
In all honesty, I think at the moment I sort of agreed with myself to admit defeat when it comes to waking up, because if I am awake, it does depend. I feel like there's sort of a short period. It's almost like if I wake up and manage to get back to sleep within like a certain amount of time, then it tends to be okay. But any longer than that, and it's like I'm awake, that's it. I'm alert, I'm awake. And getting back to sleep is so hard. And often I just end up getting quite frustrated if I try and force myself to settle down. Yeah, that's not great, because then often I'm not getting enough hours of sleep. I suppose as soon as you try and force yourself to sleep, it becomes next to impossible to do it. So
Helen, wondered if you could expand a little bit about how does poor sleep exacerbate ADHD symptoms?
The symptoms of ADHD can make it really difficult to sleep, and poor sleep can then, as Emily said earlier, impact on ADHD symptoms during the day. So we know poor sleep, as I said, can affect concentration, focus, make us prone to illness, affect our mood and our emotional regulation. It can make us more irritable, more accident prone, and can present symptoms that are similar to ADHD. So if you have ADHD and you're sleep deprived, then it can just exacerbate all of these symptoms, making it incredibly difficult to fall asleep. You also touched, Blondine, about mental health. And, you know, there's lots of research that indicates that poor sleep can adversely affect mental health. And certainly we see quite a high number of young people who have ADHD, but also struggle with their mental health. So they may have anxiety, they may have low mood or depression. And obviously that lack of sleep, again, exacerbates those difficulties. Is the sleep deprivation impacting on the ADHD symptoms?
Emily, you mentioned briefly that, you know, you have difficulty concentrating if you have a poor night's sleep. Is there anything else you would like to add on how sleep difficulties and poor sleep can affect you the next day?
I think in terms of my mental health as well, I think I can relate quite strongly to that in terms of how the sleep, well, I mean, I suppose overall it, the fact that it exacerbates the ADHD symptoms means that it made worse the feelings I had towards myself, I suppose, in a sense, like in terms of, you know, like if I felt like I wasn't getting things done properly, or if I didn't have the concentration to get my work done and stuff like that, then often that just results in a lot of negative thought patterns. And yeah, I definitely feel like in terms of anxiety, like that, I mean, already there's that nervous energy I get with ADHD, or like the kind of feeling of being on edge a lot of the time, and without sleep it was, I don't know, it just tends to be just a million times worse. It's almost like your body just cannot manage to deal with even the smallest of like stimuli. It's like it just, everything just feels very overwhelming, or you feel like you sort of want to just, I don't know, I guess shut down, or maybe, not sure exactly what phrasing I would use, but it's like I'm too exhausted to think about anything, but then I'm also so on edge that I'm thinking about everything. I don't know how that's possible simultaneously, but that's what it feels like.
Thank you, Emily. I can highly relate to that. I know exactly what you mean. I don't know if the listeners will relate to that. Ellen, what is the difference between the sleep schedule of someone with ADHD?
I think we have touched on it, and I think it is very similar to sleep schedules for everybody. The ideal temperature for your room is between 16 and 18 Celsius, which is actually a lot lower than you'd expect. And the reason for that, and the reason people say have a bath half an hour before bed, is because by submerging your body in warm water, you raise your core body temperature. When you get out of the bath, your body temperature then starts to drop. That drop is linked to the release of our melatonin. So that's why they suggest a cool bedroom as well, because of that. But I think there are some key things. I think there are some differences. Certainly visuals and prompts can be really helpful. So I've known a number of young people who've used alarms, whether it's on smart speaker so that they've got a little alarm to tell them when it's maybe time to start winding down or thinking about bedtime. And visuals, you know, just prompts. So it doesn't mean pictures necessarily, but even just bullet point list of things that they need to do in that build up towards the bedtime routine. What we strongly suggest is 1 to 2 hours without gadget before bed. And the reason for that is because the blue light that is emitted from gadgets, and gadgets will be your televisions, laptops, mobile phones, Xboxes, games consoles, things like that, it impacts on the release of our melatonin. So if we've already heard that, you know, there is this delay in the production of melatonin in young people with ADHD, really they need all the help that they can get in terms of helping with that production of melatonin, and gadgets just don't. They hinder the release of melatonin, melatonin being our hormone that helps to regulate our sleep-wake cycle. However, I'm always very conscious that's easier said than done. And the other thing I was just going to mention was music. So often, generally, our sleep advice may be in a darkened, quiet room. What I found with a lot of the young people who have ADHD that I've supported over the years, that doesn't work for them, because often can become distracted by what is going on in the rest of the house. So what we've found that has worked in the past is music. So this is music, possibly on a Wi-Fi speaker or a Bluetooth speaker, because you don't want to, if you've got the gadget in the room, you may be distracted and want to go on it and read messages, etc. Get something that plays music for 8 to 12 hours. So I'm thinking YouTube or something like that, so that it's just playing on a loop. And the reason for that is, and I wanted to pick it up because of what Emily said earlier, so we all partially wake, perfectly typical, everybody does it. It says we're coming out of our one full sleep cycle, going into another, we come into partial waking. What generally happens in good sleepers is we roll over, we might mess about with our pillow and we go back to sleep. But for people who struggle with their sleep, what happens is they come into their partial waking and then they're more likely to fully wake at this time. And just a couple of examples, if you change the environment, this is likely to happen. So if you go to bed listening to music, but it's like switches off after an hour, when you come into your partial waking, the environment has changed. So you're more likely to fully wake at that time. So what we suggest is keeping the environment as consistent as possible throughout the night, so that when you come into the partial waking, there's more chance that you'll just rouse and then settle back to sleep.
Thank you, Helen. And I'd like to add on that, as well as music, I mean, in a very similar way, I know a lot of the strategies that worked with adults is the white noise. So, you know, whether it's a river or the rain or whatever. I know some people get distracted by the melody of music. It's just too distracting. But white noise is a bit more neutral and just a background noise that also works very well. Emily, have you got any things that work for you and you can help?
I know for me, my sleep problems were a combination of obviously ADHD, which really explains why it started so early on. But I also experienced a lot of nightmares growing up as well. And I think that in itself is very difficult, because especially in that time when you wake up, if you wake up from a nightmare, occasionally you've got quite a lot of anxiety or adrenaline because of that sort of like stress, if it's a scary experience. And for me, in the evening, I find if anything, then drinking a cup of coffee does not keep me awake. It actually makes me really quite tired, sort of acts as a stimulant, but then also it kind of it lasts and then runs out a lot quicker than like natural stimulants in your body. It is very bizarre the way that it
I've
works.
I've heard that before, Emily, that I've got a colleague who has ADHD and she can have a coffee at bedtime and it helps. Like, whereas I'd be, yeah, I wouldn't sleep if I had coffee at bedtime. So
I think obviously I still have issues, but that's more down to the fact that I really struggle with being more strict with myself when it comes to actually doing these things. But I do know that they help. And predominantly when you were talking about listening to things, I was thinking about ASMR, which isn't a hugely talked about topic as of yet, although it's, I mean, in terms of the online community, it's become phenomenally huge since I first discovered it when I was about 14. And I suppose it's like just an alternative type of sound, but the idea of sort of ASMR is that it stimulates this very relaxing feeling in your body, which a lot of people get when people play with their hair or when they get a massage or like things like that. It's a very interesting, the science behind it is very confusing and not something I could explain, but it is just a very relaxing feeling. And the fact that there are sounds that you can listen to that can trigger that same response, I found that to be infinitely helpful. Often my challenge is purely just getting myself to lie down and listen to it.
Thank you, Emily. So we talked about how can we work with ADHD to sleep better. Helen, what can we do to wake up better?
There are some things that overlap, and taking into account what Emily was saying about it is really difficult to, you know what you need to do, but it's not always easy to do it. We talk a lot about routine. That includes a bedtime routine at night, but I would say that it needs to be flexible in the sense that there are certain things you have to do, but the order you do it for somebody with ADHD might be different each night so that they can get those tasks done. So I think sometimes being too prescriptive backfires and makes it incredibly difficult for people with ADHD to follow through with the routine. The other key thing is the wake-up time. We know that young people and young adults with ADHD can really struggle to wake up. And the other piece of advice we give is to try and get up at the same time each day. If you're really struggling and you're trying to make changes to your sleep, that would include sort of weekends and holidays. Once you've sort of embedded a good routine and things have improved, it could be that you could have a short lie-in. The problem is we often see, and I've seen this, you know, personally within my own household, they're up so early during the week that at the weekend they're so exhausted that they then stay in bed half the day. The problem with that is you then take away some of that sleep pressure, so the need to sleep at a particular time that following night. So we do try to suggest, you know, routine is really important, and that waking up and going to sleep at the same time every day is really important. There's been some studies that show that morning light, so going outside in the morning, whether it's a short walk or even, you know, if in some natural daylight in the morning, can really help reset our circadian rhythm, our body clock, ready for the evening. And obviously exercise or physical activity. Again, not everybody finds exercise and activity easy, but there's lots of research, as I'm sure you're aware, that about the positive impact, not just on sleep, but on emotional well-being as well. So trying to be as active as possible during the day can really help.
Thank you, Helen. How can we cope and adjust for times when we know we're not going to get a good night's sleep, such as sleeping at someone else's house, which, you know, that has loads of different stimuli? You know, when we know we're not going to get a good night's sleep, what can we do?
Unfortunately, we can't make up for lost sleep, hence why we say about not lying in. So what I would say is, you know, we do live in the real world and, you know, late nights occasionally because you're going out and holidays. And what we say is sleep routine is really helpful. However, there are going to be times when that does go out the window. You know, don't beat yourself up. I think it's really important. And I think Emily touched on this earlier about getting annoyed with yourself because you're not sleeping properly, and it just adds to the pressure. So take the pressure off, accept that this is going to be, things are out of sync tonight. I'm going to get back on it. You know, I'm going to deal with tonight. I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to relax and enjoy myself. And then the following night, I'm going to try and get back into some sort of routine.
And I think there's also an important element that if you know you're going to have a disturbed night, if it's planned that, you know, well, on Saturday night, I'm not going to sleep well, or it's going to take some time to recover. What I find very useful is to make sure I don't plan anything important the next couple of days, because I know that the next day after a bad night's sleep, I won't be able to function properly. I thought that was very helpful for me to make sure, you know, even in terms of work or studying or my family, when I know something is going to happen, I'm going to get a poor night's sleep, the next day is cleared out.
And in some situations, a nap can help. It's just being really mindful with naps about how long you're going to have a nap for. I mean, we usually say, you know, if you have a 20-minute nap, it's like a power nap because you're not going into a deep sleep. You're more likely to go into just your stage two sleep. So maybe a power nap might refresh you enough to counter the late night, but just have it earlier in the day, so not late in the day, because it will affect obviously settling to sleep that night.
So, thank you, Helen. So just to summarize, what are the three key takeaways to improving sleep with ADHD? If I start with you, Emily.
Firstly, it would be to not, we've briefly gone over it, but just not stressing yourself out too much over the whole situation, because becoming frustrated or annoyed or feeling disappointed, all of that just makes it far worse to try and manage. I would say then, moving on from that, I guess, is just regularity, even if it's just one or two things that you definitely do every night around the same time. I find having a daily routine to be immensely boring, so I can't do the same thing every day. But there are, you know, like a select couple of things that maybe I will do in the evening, that, like, say, brushing my teeth at a specific time. And that kind of, I guess, again, I'm the science behind it I couldn't explain, but I guess that kind of gives me that feeling of, okay, it's kind of bedtime now, without putting too much pressure on myself. And yeah, I think as the last thing, maybe allowing yourself to kind of take a step back in terms of, you know, like for me, I find if we spoke about a bit about how it becomes quite a vicious cycle with having bad sleep. And often because I've got lots of other things that I need to be getting done, like studying or need to get the groceries, or there's all this stuff I've got to do in a week, it starts to become like a second thing, or it's just perhaps like not in my list of priorities. So I guess all I would say is sometimes it's okay to kind of just be like, actually, I'm going to cancel everything I had planned to do today, because otherwise this is just going to continue. And I suppose like giving yourself that opportunity to reset sometimes, and again, not being annoyed at yourself because you've, you know, come out of rhythm again or something, because yeah, it happens. So yeah.
Helen, what are your key three messages?
So I think, and I know this goes against what Emily said in some respects, so routine, but it is what I was trying to say about a flexible routine. I think there is a need for some level of routine, or and I think your teeth brushing is brilliant, because that is like a sleep association. So you associate brushing your teeth with going to bed. So at least some routine that works for you as an individual. My next one would be relaxation. And I think this is linked to what Emily was saying about taking the pressure off, because I think pressure to sleep just really counteracts wanting to go to sleep and being able to go to sleep. So I think it's just some time in the hour before you go to bed, when hopefully you're not on your gadgets. And that might be some self-care time. It might be some mindfulness or a relaxation technique that you particularly like. Maybe some journaling, if you like journaling, or positive thinking, you know, just whatever works for you. And then my other one was the turning off the tech, which I know isn't going to go down well with everybody, but we know the impact tech has on us, because it isn't just the blue light. Although I talked about the blue light earlier, it is about, you know, it can be highly stimulating, but it can also raise anxiety. I'm very conscious, you know, that people have got access to you 24/7 with our mobile phones, and that can be quite anxiety provoking. So yeah, if you can turn off the tech an hour before bed, it can be really beneficial, both emotionally but also for your sleep.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Helen and Emily, for joining us today. That was extremely informative. Thank you for sharing your experience on this really problematic issue. Once again, our thanks go to clinical partners for supporting this ADHD podcast series. With the UK's largest network of senior mental health professionals, clinical partners can help ensure your child is fast-tracked to the right diagnosis and optimized treatment plan. For further information and advice for families and carers, search for clinical partners ADHD or visit www.clinical-partners.co.uk. For more details on ACAM, please visit the ACAM website, www.acamh.org, and Twitter at ACAMH. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.